interrupting the current neo-uranial, climate-challenged, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring behind a woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting Episode BTWRLM 604. And remember, being free is not a spectator sport, so get you behind a woodshed, because you don't know what you missed until you get behind a woodshed. And it's pretty much that simple. And the correction's pretty quick. All you got to do is step up. Unless you're incapacitated. Without majority. Treat it as a child. Behind a woodshed. Because you've never stepped up to defend yourself. As we are hearing, they're bringing it forward. How quickly this came on us. Australia restricts access to social media for children under 16. And you say, what's wrong with that? I'm not under 16. Remember what I said about this stuff. How do they do that? Think about how they've done that, how they've been doing it, and think about any alternatives, if they're there, that they're not using. Today, the government has introduced world-leading legislation, folks. World-leading. If you ever thought that the jurisdictions were confined to their borders. World-leading legislation to enforce a minimum age of 16 years for social media. The Online Safety Amendment, Social Media Minimum Age, Bill 2024, will deliver greater protections for young Australians during critical stages of their development, the Australian Prime Minister's office said in a statement. Social media platforms themselves will be responsible for ensuring that children under 16 cannot create an account, with fines of up to $49.5 million Australian dollars for systemic breaches, the statement said. Now, the only way a platform can be assured that the users are over 16 years old is that the government presumes all men and women to be children and subject to direct control. Or the platform gets it. There's your third-party liability again, as I've been talking about it and explaining. And I've been warning about this for years and years on how this was going to come down. And here we're seeing it now being implemented as leading global legislation. Not only are you Aussies presumed children, you are also going to be presumed without the capacity and incompetent. These are legal terms. Go look them up. That happens until you can provide your master with enough evidence to rebut the presumption you are but children in the eyes of your English monarch by way of your governor general, like all independent crown colonies. The governor general of Australia is the representative of the monarch of Australia, currently Charles III. And just like America promoted to be independent, even though it then adopted most of Britain's legal system of His Britannic Majesty with a constitutional twist and a torn and the golden reservation of power, don't you know? If you read and read carefully, and think about what you're doing and what they're saying. And I think they were so much more ahead of us than we would have ever thought. And if you think that that's far-fetched, listen to Orban reference and remember the United States of America making that treaty of peace with His Britannic Majesty. It's only about 250 years old. And you must understand that a treaty of peace, actually, what it actually does, and to appreciate what he might be saying here, if we think over what is going on and what we're told right here in the good old news. West's 500-year hegemony is over, says Viktor Orban. The dominant center of the world is shifting to Eurasia, according to the Hungarian Prime Minister. The West's 500-year global hegemony is over and the future will belong to Eurasia, he says. The idea that, quote, the whole world should be organized on a Western model, close quote, and that the nations will be willing to join it in exchange for economic and financial benefits has failed, Orban said at the Eurasia Forum in Budapest on Thursday. Quote, it is understandably difficult for Western leaders to give up the sense of superiority to which they are accustomed. We are the smartest, the most beautiful, and the most developed, and the richest, Orban argued. According to the Hungarian leader, the Western elites have arranged themselves to protect the status quo of the old glory, which will eventually lead to an economic and political blockade. The Western world has been challenged from the East, the Hungarian leader declared, adding that the next period will be the century of Eurasia. Quote, 500 years of civilization dominance of the West has come to an end, Orban said. Now, I want to have you understand there's a splitting here of the sheets. it may have come to an end for the East or Eurasia. It isn't coming to an end relative to what? The United States of America existing for only 250 years. The 500-year reign of the West is who or what then? Makes this a very interesting comment indeed. And indeed, you know them when you see them. You hope you're thinking, put your thinking caps on when I bring this stuff up, and there's a lot of study to go on behind this to back up so that you know, and part of the game here is I can't just hand you what you think is the evidence and just let you take it and carry it. You'll get hurt yourself. You'll just hurt yourself because you thought you knew. You trusted me behind what I said, and I know you need to see these old documents and see how this goes on. And why did Orban say the West and tie it to a 500-year period the United States hasn't lived? And maybe you're going to see more and more and more of what's going on here and what we're looking at and what we've been duped about the whole entire time. Now, what I reserved in BTWRLM 602 relative to the escalating matters in Ukraine toward a nuclear confrontation for no good anticipation to alter anything either. Biden's tantrum or deep state direction is what I'm looking at here, these lunatics. Biden authorizes, it is reported, and this is going to be a theme here, folks, that you have to pay attention to. I'm not talking about this. I'm talking about what they do to us and what we run with. Who's doing it? What they get away with and what we, the people, let them get away with. Biden announces Ukrainian long-range strikes into Russia using ATACMS, A-T-A-C-M's, missiles. And so listen to what they say. Biden authorizes that long-range attack. Russia has said, you do that. We're at war. We're going to war. We're not going to back off. And so we got to look very carefully at the diplomacy and diplomatic relations that are going on. There are none, but look at the comments going on right now, too. Pay attention on this one. This is really a master class and nothing happened, but everyone believes it and how fast this story went around the world. You know, rumor travels at the speed of light. President Biden has signed off on the Ukrainian military use of U.S.-made Army tactical missile systems, the ATACMS missiles, to try to help defend its faltering positions in Ukrainian-occupied areas of Russia's Kursk region. The New York Times reported on Sunday, citing U.S. officials apprised of the situation. Officials told the newspaper that they do not expect the shift in policy to fundamentally alter the course of the war, that's New York Times phrasing, and indicated that Biden could further authorize Kiev to use the weapons in direction besides Kursk in the future. Listen very carefully to what they're saying here, or what they're purporting they reported, what was reported to them. Don't forget what Russia has said about this and how dangerous this just the report we're being told is. Remember, in the beginning it says he signed off on it. So we're going to go back to that. Washington reportedly expects ATACMS to be used to strike troop concentrations, military equipment, logistics, ammunition depots, and supply lines, all with the goal of, quote, blunting the effectiveness of the ongoing Russian military operation to clear Kursk of Ukrainian forces. So look very carefully. They're focusing on the incursion of Ukraine into Russia at Kursk. And that's not deep, okay? So this is the big deal. And they think they can go in here and attack that with these. And that was supposed to be a red line, but you have to understand the capacity of an ATACMS system to do what it does and where it was going to be used or said to be used, and then was said to be used, but within, well short of what the deep line was. So understand here, this is a completely serious thing that needs to be understood, because I looked at and listened to a lot of people run with this, and we are, if this was to be real, we would be looking at nuclear war. And this is what the Biden administration is allowing in their silence that the New York Times to say, these authors to present. So if there's any merit to this article, I suspect Russia, as long as if nothing very serious was attacked subsequent to this, I think beyond what Washington assumes Ukraine will militarily, will continue a measured response here. And we can only hope for Russia doing this. As I said, we're not in nuclear war right now because of Russia's forbearance to not go there, and now to rewrite their nuclear protocol to tell the world what it's going to be about and how it's going to come down in the future. And so even though it is said that it will be considered a direct attack with the West, and until Trump gets into office and the Democrats putting the pressure on Trump to gracefully exit or make him look bad in this, is another political angle that's going on. Again, I want you to focus so that we can tone this thing down a bit. It's still very serious. A push of a button and we're into it. As Putin said, a nuclear war is over in an hour. And I want you to very seriously think about that. A nuclear war, they're not worried about it. A nuclear war is over in an hour. And the United States regime is said, reported, to be wanting to poke the bear. But let's get back to who the author was. It's the New York Times. Now, I said if there was any merit to the article, the reason is the article contains no reference to any official source document or statement from any named government representative, let alone Biden, who reportedly signed on to something. Certainly there could be the silent okay, but if you look at all the things that have come down, I don't think that's been given. And now this has been for quite a few days, and we're not seeing much more. The Biden administration already balked at its own recent suggestion to agree to long-range attacks upon Russia by Ukraine when Putin came out to say, better don't. Biden is risking the entirety of Ukraine being made by Russia, what I think Putin called the sanitary zone, a corridor area, made because of the range of the missiles that the West said they were going to be using and to keep NATO far enough away. So consider all this on the table that is being played at this point. And then you have the usurper in chief, Zelensky. In any response, did not confirm the permission to strike, didn't specify the ATACMS missiles, saying only that blows are not inflicted with words and that rockets will speak for themselves. Now, technically, guided Army tactical missile systems weapons are not rockets. So this looks like a dangerous fake news. This looks like a dangerous head fake. This looks like, again, they've been, as the United States so-called tactic and method is to do to try and get Russia to overreact. And again, I hope they are keeping their temperament. It looks like they are, but this is a very serious proposition that went on. As we saw, if anybody who read the news and then watched the world took it and ran with this thing. Anyway, it's just very dangerous. And this whole thing is even far, far worse, much more egregious. This sort of ambiguity is very dangerous. And this is what we heard before and I reported on. The United States was using the tactic of ambiguity. I reported on that and observed that nobody should be using ambiguity with Russia regarding nuclear threats. This sort of lie is a setup that can, New York Times lie is a setup that can get millions, if not billions of people killed if by chance ambiguous actions or signals are sent by the West or perceived by Russia whom reacts through nuclear defense. That's one of the policies that kind of hang in there. It's always going to be in a defensive position and posturing for them. So as of this compilation of information that I've come across, the State Department is playing into this ambiguity, neither confirming or denying the information that the U.S. has authorized ATACMS missile strikes deep into Russia. And then the State Department stated it currently is unable to confirm a change in U.S. policy regarding allowing Kiev to strike Russia with long-range weapons. So Russia is left to work with this worst-case scenario. And I understand it isn't the ATACMSs that are used. They've really already been used. If you're going to take and understand how this information is coming and how they telegraph things. They encroach on the line a little bit. The territorial lines change and this and that. And we've got to listen very carefully as to where they're being attacked. It's a fuzzy area whether or not the Ukraine is recognized that Russia is on Russia territory that they've taken or the one they've taken still under contest. And you're looking, they're playing right in that zone, which is also a very, again, ambiguous and dangerous position. gratefully, it allows each side to not go aggressive. And that's where Russia is, if you look very carefully what they're saying. Again, we're right at the nuclear stage if Russia chooses at this point. The United States is being just beyond. I can't even understand it. Never would have thought of it this way. So they've already been used. The long-range missiles from UK have been used. The effect are far shorter than the Ukrainian drones and stuff that have been used as far as deep strikes. Again, I think it struck the second, after this report, it was struck 100 kilometers. It's still way short of where they've also attacked. And it's kind of like, you know, again, as Lavrov responded, this is the notice of an escalation that the United States and the West wants to do. So the point is why this line is so important and why, well, the ambiguity so they can maybe keep a distance is it goes into deep strikes. It means NATO are directly fighting against Russia. There was a question. This is the game, that's the strategic game that's being played right now as Russia's moving this thing along and taking advantage of this ambiguity in a way. Again, there it'll be how what their temperament maintains. And it's also reported that the deputy chairman of the Security Council of Russia and former Prime Minister Dmitry Medvedev has already written about this on his Telegram account. In this case, the right arises to launch a retaliatory strike with weapons of mass destruction against Kiev and the main NATO facilities, wherever they are. And this is already World War III, which brings the world to a very precarious place because of the immoral idiocy of the Biden regime counting on ambiguity to cause someone to react stupidly. But that's STOOPIDLY for those with sensitive ears. So if this NYT article is found to be fabricated, and I'm pressing that all the evidence I'm seeing is totally a fabricated issue, it requires an official investigation post haste, in that the CIA originators and collaborators they need to be immediately hunted down and required to show the proof of their claims and authority to advance such a narrative. And in the absence of a lawful authority of proof for treason and being terrorists, they need to be sent to a daily submerged rock outcropping in the South China Sea for a very long time, or at the next tide, whichever takes them first. I cannot tell you how serious this is and how stupid it's being played. Again, what else do you say stupid is, as stupid does? And I have a link for you in the blogcaster. And as I say that, I forgot to mention already, we did have a very serious problem with the website. It's back. And so we're watching it very attentively. The new site is coming together, I'm told. A lot of work is going into it right now. So pretty soon we're going to be free of some problems. One of the main remaining problems is the hosting company itself. And we have an excellent coding people on this, and they've been able to run an end around to try and make sure we get all the content that was being trapped. And almost it looks like the problems were being caused by the host at this point, although they deny it. Anyway, lots of stuff going behind the scenes. Now the blogcaster should be coming back up. I've got the last 4 or 5 months to put back up. They were lost, I believe, or maybe a couple weeks. And so those will be going online to interrupt this part of it. But those of you that have not been able to find the website, it should be coming back up. And the past blogcasters should be available. Although the ones that were lost, it's going to take me a while if I can remember how they were built to put them together. You will certainly likely have all the links, if not the caption headings. And I put the caption headings as a different level, a different nuance of information I'm throwing out as I break these stuff down for you and put them in categories, if you will, that you can tie those together as well. It's part of what the tag things kind of come out to be as well. It's kind of interesting how this all integrates at some level without a real forward plan. It's, I guess when you speak more in the truth than the facts, it all seems to roll together at the end. So kind of work apart. And like I said, if we all even worked apart, we'd finally come to this work shoulder to shoulder, looking into the same stinking abyss. And I think this broadcast and all the help that's coming, that has come, that comes together, and all the stuff we're trying to produce, and the more stuff that's coming out, and what sound's doing, and the now tag themes, just listen to them. They're kind of fun. I don't know how this machine, these AIs pull this together. They're real good at doing that, because it's just, there's nothing factual about them. They're just made up anyway. But they actually offer a new level of integration of the information. They will even say stuff that's an amplification of what I say, or even something a slight bit askance of what I say that still supports the condition that we're living in. And then ultimately that we have something to do about it. But I'll give you the New York Times article. Again, please read these very, very carefully and look very carefully that at this point, and maybe until it's developed, there has been no official document where it said that Biden actually agreed, even though their silence would be an agreement. But this was run like a house of fire across the world. The rumor ran around the world 10 times before I've heard hardly anybody. I've heard, now seen a couple people saying, wait a minute, it doesn't look real here. This looks like fake news. You know, I don't think it's really fake news more than a psyop. CIA op is a psyop. And that's what's kind of going on here to get people to believe that there's something going on that there really isn't. So it says Biden allows Ukraine to strike Russia with long-range U.S. missiles. The very interesting title on this, allows by omission, could be. But you notice they really haven't done that, and the distances going have not reached yet. What the question here is, those ATACMS systems, they require, if I understand correctly, they require United States satellites to operate. Now, my thought was they don't need them for a 100-kilometer firing that they just did. They would need them at the deeper ranges up at the 300-kilometer distance, where they use the United States government and the United States personnel have to operate these things. I also found out, and anybody can, again, I'm not the sole repository of all this knowledge, I have to go look too. The HIMARS system is what delivers this missile system. So that's what the importance and the problem that the HIMARS was, I now notice, that they brought these in and they're, if you will, dual use. And these are medium-range missiles. Those ranges are defined in some laws that have been negated by Trump. The negation of those laws and agreements and treaties and now allows Russia to now build their hypersonic materials. And we just saw another new one come out, devastating what it can do. A multi-headed missile comes in at hypersonic speed. Just nothing can stop these things. And in a way, I kind of like to hear that if we're looking at trying to make peace. We have a nation that's the temperament of which is not to go make war. I think that's maybe the best we can hope at this point. But look very carefully at this NYT story. Look very carefully. Everybody use this NYT story, authored by three people at NYT, to go and make the claim that this was actually formally agreed to. So we have, there was another comment. I think it was Marjorie Taylor Greene coming out and wringing her hands over this. And I'm not saying it's not serious that this could be. I mean, by omission, it could be, although we haven't seen that reflected. But she comes out saying, well, this is a serious problem. Why is the Biden regime allowed this? Or how is it, you know, signed on to this? But I asked her, and I asked some other congresspeople as well that made the same statement. What is your official source supporting the NYT incitement? And I particularly use the word incitement on this. I haven't found one yet, the source document. Then I asked her to repeal the Smith Modernization Act of 2012 now, please. Because that's the act that removed the ability to propagandize, the United States government to propagandize to we the people and be okay with it. This is what I think is really partly going on. So, ask your so-called representatives and your senators where these authorities are. Why are they running on this story and fomenting an excitement in people, even to expect it? They want it. You're bloodthirsty people, it seems to be, in the world. Or to make such a fervor in it that, and this is another angle, it causes question in all the nations, the leaders of other countries around Russia. And that's partly why you see Russia, Putin, coming out and so clearly stating their position. There's so much working on this that the slightest error of perception could literally end it all in an hour until the nuclear winter clears and all the grounds clean and all that other nice stuff that shouldn't happen. Right? So be careful. I'm real concerned that people, well, we saw it happen at the Kobe swim. So, anyway, Biden can't be trusted to be forthright about any decision to deceive we the people that condones Armageddon or object where the NYT and the other authorities are wrong playing the stupid, demented ambiguity game. know, how much more dangerous when people are already calling out the danger that AI shouldn't be allowed to push a nuclear button. United States President Joe Biden and his Chinese counterpart, Chairman Xi Jinping, agreed on November 16th that humans, not artificial intelligence, should control nuclear weapons. So they want to use our lesser animal being to do the cherry red button pushing instead of men and women, I suppose. There is a good reason for that, given that the two powers are increasingly competing in the AI field. Alexei Leonov, a veteran Russian military analyst and editor of the magazine Arsenal of Fatherland, told Sputnik, quote, even in the most peaceful scenario, sooner or later, AI will unleash a global war in which most of humanity will perish. Leonov said, those animals amongst us and mankind too. And I always make this distinction because you look at the humanist imposition on our life as another type of attack. The word human, go look at its origins. It didn't develop until the Catholic Church, and I think around 1453. And then it came into being. And so all of mankind sort of got kicked off the edge, and yet you look at your United States laws, I pointed out, just to show you these things are real. They exist. They are distinctions and differences. United States law in the National Environmental Policy Act, the supplemental code that it's used to modify any other act relative to this environmental, points that mankind is to be, things are to be balanced in favor of mankind. Now, the administrative world, the administrative corruption got a hold of it, and they moved the word to human. And so you'll see this disparagement between them and the fact that they exist, and they're different, and they are different. That's why I make the distinction. Why do we make distinctions? Those are like savings clauses. Those words are like savings clauses. They're talking about humanity. They're talking about the animal property. Mankind, including women, is a different creation. And this is the thing I ask my listener, go look for these things that are out there. Don't just shrug your shoulders. There are lessons for us to notice. There's somebody paying attention to this, is the other thing. It always just blows me away. They pay attention to this distinction. Maybe one day you'll read enough and you'll see that. It's kind of a neat awareness. It finally occurred to me. This is so consistent across the board and through time. Someone's paying attention. And that just fortified the savings clauses. That just fortified the distinctions. That was about the same time I'm coming to the conclusion we have to stay in a certain language. And that was helped by understanding property law, in particular the mining law and the mining claims and all that. You speak a completely different language when you stay inside the Mining Law Soil Disposal Act. You don't if you get into leases and temporary things and where there's no possessions and things like that. The language is different. And I can tell, and that's why I told you before, you can listen to anybody and you can tell exactly what their study is, or pretty much what they're talking about exactly, but you can tell their study. Whether they commingle the words, whether they only use one side, the human side, whether they use mankind and those things, property law or not, or leasable, you've got your mind in leasables and saleables, in things of rents, all the taxable side. Then I can tell just by what people say. And it's not that you're wrong, it's that's what you know. But if you're talking about something you need to be on the other side, now we've got a certain problem. And I've, for years, that's how I've been explaining this thing to people, to get them corrected so then they can do the right and better action. But take note on this, and on this little story, this thing about AI. Don't apply it to just war. Even in the most peaceful scenarios, AI will destroy. And yet I remind y'all of the thousands of medical compounds AI created in that one report I did, a year ago almost, that only one of which might have been safe for people because AI is AI-prone. AI is. It's a tool. It's not to be anything used more than that. So you call a company with a complaint adversarial to the complaint and AI answers. Right? That's what we want. In even a peaceful situation, it's going to cause destruction. Article goes on to say, earlier this year, Russia researchers from the Georgia Institute of Technology, Stanford University, Northeastern University, and the Hoover Warm Gaming and Crisis Simulation Initiative tested several AI models as decision makers in war simulations and concluded that AI had a tendency to start arms race and nuclear confrontations in different scenarios. Leonkov notes that the United States military started using the use of the AI in the military in 2018. Such a babe in arms, and they're just already wanting to rely on it, even thinking about it. It was expected the tool could be integrated into nuclear deterrence architecture, including intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance systems, and even nuclear command, control, and communications. However, authorities soon realized that AI is prone to errors and can be disrupted by cyber attacks or confused by incoming contradictory data. You know, when it hallucinates, that's another anthropomorphic addition to just a computer, silicone and logic, and a command structure, command code structure. It also has limitations when it comes to decision-making in a chaotic battlefield environment, the expert points out. Quote, in these conditions, artificial intelligence does not work at all, he said. Can your life get chaotic? Do bureaucracies, whether public or private, thrive on the chaos caused of ignorance and error, pronation? Is pronation a word? Well, I used it, then it must be a word. Anyway, therefore, putting AI in service, given all the shortcomings that it has, is pure madness, the pundit says. AI is pure madness, folks. It will eventually, sooner or later, push the cherry red button and nuke your life. Now apply that, what I've been saying, as I said, don't restrict it just to nuclear war. Apply that to your token citizenship in the Siberian Gulag world order that's being built up around us. And following along similar lines, an observation in the article I read in the previous episode entitled, Here's the Trump Mystery, the True Mystery of Donald Trump's Foreign Policy. Will the United States President-elect be able to make his declining empire great again in a world that rejects its domination? And remember, we were talking there about, and they're saying it now, I didn't even get to those stories yet. So much going on, I just don't have all the time I need. But hopefully I'll be getting some extra time in a little bit, but we'll see, not quite yet. But they're actually, look at the techno swamp is actually saying this is the new Rome. America's the new Rome, and Trump's the leader. Maybe like Caesar watching it burn. Here, folks. It's even coming out like this. It's pretty fascinating. Will the United States president-elect be able to make his declining empire great again in a world that rejects its domination? By Konstantin von Heischmeister, a political and cultural commentator from Germany, author of the book Esoteric Trumpism, and editor-in-chief of Aktos Publishing. It's the same author that I spoke of about the last article in the other episode. But moving into deeper waters, considerations and self-reflection of the dynamic unfolding in the present condition, or if we the people are to meet our obligations, duties, and responsibilities to ourselves to avoid being mere captives trapped in the hold of the USS Trumptanic, considerations that need to be made in either monitoring the new Messiah's proper course, or if erroneous, for example, like the TechnoSwap AI says, something, and we got to be diligent to look for the immediate correction, or being able to chart a more correct future destination to coexist in the reordered world that they're planning, and to avoid an implosion, maybe similar to that Titan submersible, which in the end was submersible, though not too Titanic, despite all the heroic claims to the contrary. And I'd like to read this article. It's it offers a lot to think about and gives us a lot of food for thought for ourselves as well, and looking through what is going on in what we're watching happening. It's historic stuff. Again, I have to give credit to Trump on what he did, where he came through in order to prevail. And now what he has handed to him, and then all the magic and myth and archetype that's around him. Not that I say that it's actually working, but I'm saying is that we can use that information to understand it's an illusion what we're watching, and the thing that's going, the reality that's going on, the crumbling around him is something we want to be able to pay attention and not get lost in the cheerleading of it all. Here's the true story of Donald Trump's foreign policy. Will the president-elect be able to make his declining empire great again? The real mystery of Donald Trump, the former U.S. president and now president-elect, is not his personality or even his politics, and neither is it, as many grieving American liberals seem to believe, how Trump bombastic, profane, and frequently untruthful, according to the largely pro-Trump Wall Street Journal, could possibly have amassed so much popular support? That question is actually very easy to answer. First, he could because the Democrats are just so incredibly awful in every way imaginable, from genocide to alienated elitist snobism. There was a reason pre-election polls showed that a majority of Americans believed the U.S. was on the wrong track, and that they were right even if they may well find out soon that there is a more than one way of losing one's way. And secondly, like it or not, much of America as it really is recognizes itself in Trump, obsessively individualistic yet deeply conformist, naturally anarchic yet intuitively authoritarian, and last but not least, violently aggressive yet thin-skinned too. In short, the Democrats are turning into outsiders, at least for now, and deservedly so, while Trump vibes with his people, whether he or they deserve that or not. That says more about them than about him, but none of it's terribly complicated. It just takes a certain degree of disillusionment to acknowledge. Rather, what is puzzling about Trump is that we should know him quite well by now, including from his first presidential term, and yet we don't. Symptomatically, well-informed American observers hold diametrically opposed views on whether we finally have Trump's measure or not. International political scholar Daniel Dresner stands for those stressing that much about Trump, and in particular, his foreign policy is now clear, presenting to us a much better read than before. For historians and Stalin expert Stefan Kotkin, though Trump remains unpredictable. The upshot is we simply cannot stop speculating about what the next president will do, or at least try to do, with his second term. Consider that yet another way in which Trump, this intuitively supreme manipulator of his own image and our attention, has a hold on us. Of course, our curiosity can be given before given, because it also has objective reasons. Whatever Trump may really want, and whoever he really is, one thing is certain. He is now backed up by a triumphant comeback with a strong popular mandate. This time, unless before his first term, he has not only trounced the Democrats in a bizarrely unrepresentative electoral college, but also won the popular vote, that is, the actual majority of individual ballots nationwide, in addition with Republican control of the Senate and of the House of Representatives. Now certain, Trump has a so-called trifecta with the presidency and both chambers of Congress in one hand. As a result, despite the general decline of American power, Trump is now, more than in his first term, on his way to being one of the less than a handful of men, yes, all men at this point, is just a fact, who can plausibly claim to be the most powerful leaders on the planet. If Trump so chooses, he will have the means to exert massive influence on the fate of not just the United States, but literally humanity, for better or much worse, which is more likely, not because of Trump's character, but because of American power is structurally biased toward being destructive. That is why we are seeing such intense interest in Trump's ongoing picks for high positions in his incoming administration. They have included the established yet submissive neocons, as I described in last episode, neo-clowns, such as Mark Rubio as state secretary. Odd newcomers, such as the TV personality Pete Hegseth for the Defense Department, and loyal veterans of the first Trump administration, such as Stephen Miller. Trump's appointments, it seems, can tell us at least something about how exactly he intends to wield his new improved power. I mean, to interject, Matt Gaetz has just backed out, whatever the reason is. I wonder how compromised he was. He already went through a little bit of the fire. He didn't want to continue to step in, and I don't know why. He looked like he could go on, and actually, he has on the surface, he has the intention, I think, to have made corrections, but he's now backed out, whatever Trump's intention is. See, we don't know as this thing goes on. We don't know what's going on in the backside, too. behind this. Trump, in the article, Trump will certainly not challenge the power of the U.S. oligarchy, though. Listen carefully. Massive corporate influence will persist and grow. Trump is thoroughly unrepentant billionaire. Billionaires tend to like him, and by billionaire oligarchs, Vivek Ramaswamy and Elon Musk, Trump's new best friend, have already been offered a whole new department created especially for them. But there is a question about Trump's relationship to the deep state narrowly understood, namely, as the higher levels of the bureaucracy, and especially the American Siloviki in the FBI, the judiciary, and 18 sprawling intelligence agencies, and the military. Regarding the judiciary and the FBI and the spies, both the appointments of Tulsi Gabbard as Director of National Intelligence and of Matt Gaetz as Attorney General, even if Gaetz is not certain to be confirmed, and he has dropped out, seem to indicate that Trump wants to assert himself as in with a hammer. Likewise, concerning the military top brass, Hegseth's appointment and recent leak seem to point to a serious intention to pick a fight and even conduct de facto purge. Gabbard, in addition, also sends two further signals. In the past, she has been hounded for not hating Russia and articulating the outsider view in the United States political culture. That war is usually a bad idea. Given her powerful position means, at the very least, Trump is stressing that he could not care less about such criticism. But reading the tea leaves of Trump's appointments, while not useless, has limits. Think of it as part of an American equivalent of what Western observers used to call Kremlinology. During the late Soviet period, the art of guessing about very important things with very limited clues. It is true that during his first presidency, Trump was new to the game and also felt constrained to compromise with more traditional forces in the Republican Party, which resulted in appointing officials that were incompatible with him and did not last. One of them, General H.R. McMaster, has just published a tell-all book about his time as a national security advisor in Trump's last administration. McMaster's account may have its biases, but it rings true on one important feature of the former and now incoming president's personality. He loves to be flattered and he hates being contradicted, which means he favors sycophants. Now Trump has prior experience, a stronger mandate, more organized resources behind him, while the traditional wing of the Republican Party is either dead or subdued. He also will start, as a recent foreign policy article has pointed out, with a more loyal circle of advisors. Finally, he is inevitably emboldened by his own comeback success. That much, as a matter of fact, is only human. How would he not be? At the same time, Trump's style and temperament remain indeed count for more precisely because he is freer to be himself now. That means that whomever Trump appoints now still may or may not last, depending on whether they make the boss happy or not. Now, let me interject right there. I just was thinking here a week or two ago about this very point, and I was actually wondering about the genuineness of what he was saying, and then he's a politician, and I told you it's more like a game show. And that triggered the thought, he's really the you're fired guy. And it occurred to me, it'd be easy to make a sensational show like that if you picked people that you wanted to employ that you knew you wouldn't get along with, so you could say you're fired just to show how much power you have. And it may not be the answer to why he went through so many people. On top of it, he puts people that are not compatible around him on purpose. What that does do, though, and I don't know if this article actually says this, maybe it does. What that does do, that I thought about doing that, is that he can always deny someone that position and make the decision he wanted. Again, he's in the power seat. And in the presidency, he's also immune to it now. So I think that was a very important point, make the boss happy or not. But if he's putting people that are incompatible with him, and he knows it, it's a foregone conclusion that there's going to be some strife. And to his benefit, so he can make the final say. As the authoritative American political scientist Stefan Walt has commented on X Twitter, Trump's current picks in the crucial domain of national security look as if he is not merely assembling the loyal, but he is going for people who lack the standing authority, backbone, or wisdom to stand up to him, no matter what he decides to do. There it is, producing, according to Walt, a team of lackeys. That in turn makes Trump's personal policy ideas and preferences, whether vague or concrete, all the more important. And I that's when I'm reading this article, was exactly my thoughts a week or so before in this whole condition relative to this. And I'd been thinking about that episode where I did the magic, the myth, and the archetypes. It was along the lines of those thoughts. I'm thinking this thing through, and this article touches all of these things. And inspired by esoteric Trumpism, though I didn't read the book, I read that article to you, inspired by that too, right, on top of it. So just trying to get a feel for what, why, who is this guy? Is he going to be truthful or not? He's going to do what he wants to do. Where are we going to position ourselves? He's gone in 4 years. What do we do? I'm trying to get beyond politics here. I'm trying to look at the tea leaves. This is the scant amount we can do. And again, try to position ourselves better into the future as we go. Not go to the future that they want for us. And I'm not sold that he's not part of that, whether he doesn't know that or not. I can just, again, I can show you. I've been telling you for a long time how these things work and how you can just watch. He knows them when you see them. You watch that they're walking in the direction. You might as well know they're going in that destination. And once they get the momentum going in the direction, it's very hard to get that destination, that direction, that physics, the momentum changed. Against that background, is there anything we can identify as rock solid about Donald Trump and how he sees the world? Yes, of course. And it's hidden in plain sight. Encapsulated in the slogan, Make America Great Again, it is really three things. First, the admission that America's current standing is actually not great. Second, the unquestioned assumption that it used to be great and that that will repair that greatness. Third, the equally unquestioned, though anything but self-evident, assumption that it can be repaired. For now, let's set aside the obvious question if America was really ever great. And patriots may not like to hear it, but there are compelling arguments for answering in the negative. Ask, for starters, the Native Americans exterminated to literally make room for the United States, the slaves who kickstarted its modern economy, if that is, they survived to the genocidal transatlantic deportation to join it, or the many who have suffered all over the world from America's relentless political, economic, and military aggressions, or ask the over three quarters of Americans who, according to Forbes, are living paycheck to paycheck now, meaning that their income barely covers essential living expenses and a single one missed paycheck would put them in a difficult spot. Posing such questions, however, means to step far outside what Trump can even imagine. And so it may help us to understand what he cannot do because he can't even think of it, but it won't help us understand what he actually might do. Let's try to instead take him by his word. Trump, think of Trump for a moment as an equivalent of a late Roman emperor. He will rule an empire whose best days are behind it, that suffers from the unusually high degree of corruption and moral and intellectual decay, and that will face the facts of its diminishing power and prestige. And neither will Trump. Instead, he wants to put himself at the head of the great struggle for recapturing its imagined or imaginary lost glory. What could Make America Great Again actually mean? And if we treat it on its own terms, what might it take to make it work in the realm of foreign policy in particular? Conversely, what kind of policies are sure to make it fail? That question cannot be answered by yet again going through the usual list of the U.S. foreign policy issues, tariffs, Ukraine, Russia, China, Taiwan, Israel, really, of course, Palestine, Iran, Venezuela, NATO, maybe even the EU, if it can be still get any attention at all, and so on. Rather, we need to take a big step back. The decisive issue is not what exactly Trump and his administration will do on this issue or that, but how they will frame the problems that they are trying to address. And I'll interject, that's exactly, I've said the same thing to y'all. How you reframe to a truth that was started as a falsity, or how it is reframed to you that you have to understand to reframe into the truth of what's really there. And then you can gut sense straightening things out. So he's, again, I found consistency of his observations with mine and what I've already told you endlessly at times over and over, trying to get us in the right headspace on what we're thinking about looking at, again, to anticipate get out of the school mind. Like, we've got some cheerleading to do here. And these guys are coming to save our team. And somehow we get some benefit from that. We don't. On with this report or this observation, this essay. And that means how they will frame the problems that they are trying to address. And that means how they will conceive of, literally, the world of America's place in it. Simply put, Trump can aim to make America great again by clinging to the tired, quixotic aim of primacy, and an imposed and widely resented, even hated leadership shared with no one. Or alternatively, Trump could intuitively or more explicitly do something that American leaders have been extremely bad at recently, namely learn. He could, in other words, accept the absolute or seemingly absolute primacy is gone forever, while the U.S. could still secure a comfortable place as one great power among several. In other words, Trump could hypothetically recognize that multipolarity is here to stay, or if you prefer a more traditional vocabulary, that the world is entering an era of global balance of powers, or in the very unlikely best case scenario, concert of powers, with a handful or so of players at the top and in the center, a second tier of not quite as powerful, but still important states orbiting them. I'm going to interject a bit here. There's a little, in the last few paragraphs too, even though I can agree with what he's saying here, a little bit is a bit of a Russian propaganda rolled in, so be aware of a little bit of that. There's truth, but understand it's a promotion as well. And that's last paragraph kind of said that to me a bit. When you also understand what I've said about the economic order of the world, and these lesser states are actually brought into parity. Everybody, the big ones are brought down, the lower ones are brought up, and it's an economic parity in the world that speaks. They call it multipolarity, but it's actually not. It's only economically centralized, ultimately, eventually here, even though they make it look like it's divided at this point. Descending from its always partly disillusional unipolar heights, the U.S. still has the resources to engineer a soft landing for itself among those top-level powers of the New World, if its leaders finally come to understand that no one can reverse or stop the flow of, for want of better words, history. On the other hand, if America's leaders persist in pursuing the already impossible aim of lonely supremacy, they will end up with a more severe geopolitical demotion because the ensuing conflicts will cost them too much and also end with their defeat, for instance, in the war against China that may also go global. And these are also the truths of what may be going on when you have a bunch of people not thinking too clear sitting there in Washington. To me, the epitome of how they're not thinking too clear is really dealing with a nuclear power on a principle, a tactic of ambiguity. I don't know where you go from there and expect good to come out of it. I'm just not that intelligent to figure that part out, I guess. I consider, in this context, two recent articles in Foreign Affairs, one of the Americans' two most prestigious magazines of imperial geopolitics produced by and for the American establishment. In The End of American Exceptionalism, Daniel Dresner argues that due to Trump's genuine popularity, quote, when the rest of the world looks at Trump, they will no longer see an aberrant exception to the American exceptionalism. They will see what America stands for in the 21st century. For Dresner, this is clearly regrettable. He fails to notice the obvious that America has always stood for overbearing violence wrapped in blatant hypocrisy. It is not the 21st century, silly. It's the whole damn story. Trump is just rude enough to make it screamingly obvious, even for those U.S. academics most committed to preserve at least appearances. And then also in the Foreign Affairs, there are Dan Caldwell and Reed Smith making the case for the foreign policy that eschews primacy and embraces restraint. For them, a true American first policy, the cousin slogan of Make America Great Again, must acknowledge that the U.S., quote, has overreached in its foreign policy and must correct course. The ship of state must correct course, close quote. Thereby finally creating the preconditions for not repeating the deadly mistakes of the last 20 years. Put differently, for decades, America's main victims and critics around the globe have shouted that the United States should go home. Now there are Americans within the right spectrum of the ruling section of the American establishment who admit that actually it is not such a bad idea. It is easy and very stupid to scream isolationism. Isolation is not even an option. Whatever Trump chooses to do regarding, for instance, tariffs or NATO, the U.S. will remain a heavyweight part of the international system. The real question is whether its elites will finally accept to be a normal part of that system, if still a powerful one. That brings us to the paradox. Could it be that this president, perceived as so anomalous, will end up making America not a better, but at least a less anomalous place? Ultimately, Dresner, Caldwell, and Smith are saying the same thing, that this is the way things will have to go. Some like it, some don't. But frankly, who cares? If, and it is, to speak Trumpese, a huge if, would be huge, a huge if, Trump 2.0 were to consistently implement a policy of abstaining from war and also economic warfare via sanctions, even while otherwise engaging in a hard-nosed pursuit of natural interest, then the Trumpists would have a chance to manage America's inevitable relative decline in the global pecking order. If, on the other hand, they were to continue a policy of reckless escalation with all means of always on the table, as Americans like to say, then we would only polarize the emerging multipolar system against the U.S. America is entering a new world order which it will not dominate. Its new leaders can be smart and find an influential and perhaps prosperous place for it, or they can go for broke in an attempt to recreate the bad old days of primacy. If they do, the empire will not only decline but fall, and again, maybe that would be all for the better. And I appreciate that the sentiment. As I said, keep your thinking hat on as you read through here. Listen to the subject matters that are at play at all of this. And I keep asking us, what do we want as a people? Again, you're not going to be, you can't free, being free is not a spectator sport. At some point, there has to be a recognition of what's going on, and you're either going to be led by the nose by this personality, or you're going to take responsibility for your own life, and then ultimately those around you, and start to make a world that you want to see and live in instead of the one they're driving us through. There's so much to talk through in this article, in highlighting things I did not talk to, and I'm almost sure that I could hear some of my listeners who do know what we're saying, why don't you talk about this and that, as I was rolling through that. I just wanted to get through that article, that author's views. For this time, we have our thoughts. And again, we could probably talk for hours. And the point is that either things start making sense about what he said here. And again, looking through the bias as well. But to look for the truth within this and start to come to terms with it for us as Americans. What are we looking at? History is saying we're coming to a decline. There are things that he didn't even mention in this article that can be done that would shift the power. At least, again, we're talking economics most of the time here. If we would just stop making war, make peace, right? That would be a good deal, big deal. And part of doing that would be to reset the fiscal expenditures for the military at one level. But there's a way to adjust them because of the power right now of the monetary system in the held in the United States and the dollar. We adjust that dollar just a tad bit, support it with something a lot less fiat, a whole lot more substantial. And we could then gain the lead, and then we would have to do the moral things in the world. We would have to stop being so warmongery, is what I can see. And it's going to take a lot of people who could have input. And I think we're in that time. We have the ability to do that if we would just do it. If we would just start thinking this through and working on that so that we can have a say ahead of time. As I said, I don't know what it does. I don't know if they listen. I don't get any responses on my ex-Twitter when I get an opportunity to throw things out. I only go there to put links for the broadcast there. And then I notice some things in my feed. I respond to them. But I found it interesting. I can respond to people. I can respond to any leader in the world, it seems. Whether they want to read is another thing. If they just see, if you keep your notes nice and concise and short, they read it. Their eyeballs pick it all up if it's nice and short, not complicated. And I found that's a power, a bit of a power. And so we can all consider things about that. Or we get more involved, as I say, get local, or those of you that want to dig in with your Congress critter, make them about a lot straighter, then do that too. As I said, I've seen lots of things work, but it takes tenacity and persistence. And then I don't think it's in the right direction, but I think we see that the people of America don't put up with the nonsense, actually. But we're almost a tolerant to a fault. Talk about being tolerant and intolerant. The culture, cancel culture, is certainly intolerant because it's cancel culture. But all of everybody else looking on, we're pretty tolerant about that. And I think there's a reckoning that has to be done. I think we're starting to see it. But it's not going to be on Trump. He reflects. He knows to reflect what we want, whether he's going to do it or not. You heard that right in this story. Essay. Very cool. I guess I can say this is BTWRLM 604. And one of the things I just kind of breezed over in the cabinet when he was talking about who's up around him in the cabinet, and the neo clowns and who they're beholden to. Wow. We have that in the news. I want to touch that. I didn't touch that on purpose, so I'm going to touch it right after that. I was going to get through that article. Israeli strikes kill Hezbollah Spox in regional office in Syrian Ba'ath Party, said the reports here. And again, people may not be interested in this. I think this is the problem of responsibility as well, whether or not we take it or don't. And we watch people that so-called represent us not taking it. And we remain silent, we become part of it. And the other thing is, it's easy to not think that it means, because it's over there, even if it's across the town, it's not us that's maybe a cause of some sort. However, and I'm not saying that when something happens, all things that happen elsewhere, that you are a cause. But in this case, when we're talking about principles of existence and peaceful existence for all people, then it is on us. And we are the witness to that, because it reflects on us as a potential committer of doing something, whether or not we actually take the steps or we become the victim of those that will commit it. So I read these stories, if you will, the news, to tell us that we're falling a lot short. What represents us as people, and I'm not just saying America, the governments represent the people, but they can all, I told you, don't piss off the natives and make them revolt. Don't make them stand up. They will. They don't have to have a First Amendment right. That's an international law, if you will. That's a fact, a time out of mind of man. So it happens routinely. And it's a marvel that it hasn't happened quicker in the United States, although I'm not asking for it. I'm saying that's why we're here now and having to deal with it. And we're literally on the edge of a nuclear catastrophe because of these folks as well, pushing it on top of it all. As we've heard the connections, and I've made the connections behind which you're in reporting all of it. And an Israeli airstrike on the central Beirut killed Mohammed Afif, the head of the Lebanese political and militia movement, Hezbollah's medium office, on Sunday. Lebanese media, including the Al Jadid broadcaster and a news agency, reported. Earlier in the day, eyewitnesses told Sputnik that Israeli jets attacked a building in the center of the Lebanese capital. I need to interject. I think this is being lost. Israel is attacking another country. They're attacking another country. Do we understand that? Another country. There's two anothers. Another country and another country. And so, really put this in perspective, and then who's up around Trump's? Who bought their way into up around Trump's ears in his cabinet? Now, where is this going to go? The Israeli strike that killed Afif reportedly targeted the regional office of the Arab Socialist Ba'ath Party, the ruling party in neighboring Syria. Now, this is no different than them attacking Iran in Syria. Afif did not fight with weapons and did not lead a military unit in Hezbollah. Rather, he led a media unit, Ba'ath Party Lebanon Regional Secretary General Aziz Hajazi said, confirming that the Hezbollah representative was killed while holding a meeting in the party's Beirut headquarters. Hezbollah has yet to confirm Afif's death. He is known to have been previously targeted in a separate attack on Hezbollah's media relations in October, Lebanon's Hezbollah allied Al-Mayadeen television network reported that 5 people had been killed in an Israeli strike in Beirut. These are more intentional Satan Yehuziah war crimes, violations of international law where indiscriminately killing non-military people or the press, as well as attacking a foreign nation's political party. Remember what I've been talking about, how you make the objective basis for all this. Go to the international law. It says all about this, how violative this is. The international law regarding illegal occupiers is that political functions are not to be targeted. They're off limits. This rogue state, they call the State of Israel, doesn't care. There's no law that attaches to it. And if there's no, I said there's no law, then what can you expect at home? In a representative republic, what can you expect if it's not respected out there? As we find, the ramifications of this is finally coming to bear and more openly stated. Again, UN Special Committee finds that Israel's warfare methods in Gaza, down in Gaza, in Palestine, consistent with genocide, including use of starvation as a weapon of war. I don't know, anybody that reads international law, the Nuremberg trial, all this stuff, that doesn't understand this is a violation. It's not a question. That the United States and Israel make it a question. Well, clearly, criminals will do that. Israel's warfare in Gaza is consistent with characteristics of genocide, with mass civilian casualties and life-threatening conditions intentionally imposed on Palestinians there, in the UN Special Committee to Investigate Israel Practices said in a new report released today. Since the beginning of the war, Israeli officials have publicly supported policies that strip Palestinians of very necessities required to sustain life, food, water, and fuel, the committee said. These statements, along with the systematic and unlawful interference of humanitarian aid, make clear Israel's intent to instrumentalize life-saving supplies for political and military gains. Through its siege over Gaza, obstruction of humanitarian aid alongside targeted attacks and killing of civilians, and aid workers, despite repeated UN appeals, binding orders from the International Court of Justice, and resolutions of the Security Council, Israel is intentionally causing death, starvation, and serious injury, using starvation as the method of war by inflicting collective punishment on the Palestinian population. The report documents how Israel's extensive bombing campaign in Gaza has decimated essential services and unleashed an environmental catastrophe that will have lasting health impacts. By early 2024, over 25,000 tons of explosives equivalent to 2 nuclear bombs have been dropped on Gaza, causing massive destruction and the collapse of water and sanitation systems, agricultural devastation, and toxic pollution. By destroying the vital water, sanitation, and food systems and contaminating the environment, Israel has created a lethal mix of crisis that will inflict severe harm on generations to come. The committee called on all member states to uphold their legal obligations to prevent and stop Israel's violations of international law and hold it accountable. This is probably the most important sentence and paragraph in this whole report. I'm going to read it again. The committee called on all member states to uphold their legal obligations to prevent and stop Israel's violations of international law and hold it accountable. Quote, it is the collective responsibility of every state to stop supporting the assault on Gaza and the apartheid system in the occupied West Bank, including East Jerusalem. Upholding international law and ensuring accountability for violators rests squarely on member states. A failure to do so weakens the very core of the international legal system and sets a dangerous precedent, allowing atrocities to go unchecked. And you're watching, indeed, that's exactly what they're doing, is they're undermining the entire notion of a so-called legal system. They're undermining everything that anybody could have an expectation. And if you think the United States government is going to ignore the atrocities out there, why would you expect them to protect you at home? The ICC, after more studies here and findings, issues an arrest warrant for Netanyahu, Gallant for alleged war crimes in Gaza. The chamber issued warrants of arrest for two individuals, Mr. Benjamin Netanyahu and Mr. Yoav Gallant, for crimes against humanity and war crimes committed from at least October 8, 2023 until at least May 2024, the day the prosecution filed the application for warrant of arrest, the statement read. The courts rejected Israel's arguments of a lack of jurisdiction over Netanyahu and the Gallant arrest warrants. Let me interject here. Remember, the first thing you want to do, if you can't, and do it anyway and just see what happens, is you want to challenge the court's jurisdiction. And if you're paying attention, a lot of times you can. And then there's two ways to go at it, but I won't go. I've already talked about this. I'm just going to show you. This is the first thing they know what to do. Israel knows what to do. They want to destroy international law, but they're using the procedures of law. Absolutely going to use that to try and defend themselves. They won't do it to comply, but they'll do it in order to continue the violations. With regard to the crimes, the chamber found reasonable grounds to believe that Mr. Netanyahu, Prime Minister of Israel, at the time of the relevant conduct, Mr. Gallant, Ministry of Defense of Israel, at the time of the alleged conduct, each bear criminal responsibility for the following crimes as a co-perpetrators for committing the acts, jointly with others. What? Who? I must ask. Like with the U.S. and the U.K.? Jointly with others? The war crime of starvation as a method of warfare and the crimes against humanity of murder, persecution, and other acts is what they're being charged with doing. The chamber also found reasonable grounds to believe that Mr. Netanyahu and Mr. Gallant, not too gallant here, folks, each bear criminal responsibility as civilian superiors for the war crimes of intentionally directing an attack against the civilian population. Keep track of all this. I'm highlighting these things and reading these things so that you understand where the violations are, and partly because I read them to you. This is not even a question. And we're going to watch. As the tabs come in here soon, we're going to watch and listen how the cohorts, the aiders and the betters, the funders, are going to treat this with the obligation to stop it. One of the things interesting to me about this is that the ICC had hard evidence of war crimes while the U.S. said it had none. Remember? Over and over. That's all the United States just doesn't see nothing. Like Sergeant Schultz. So I'm looking at this. Our U.S. intelligence agencies, all 18 now we know of them, and the Pentagon, that incompetent to have no hard evidence at all that an international body has possession of hard evidence and found war crimes? Even if we have a contention with the findings of that hard evidence, given this very apparent fact of the existence of the hard evidence, clearly there is some U.S. government fat that feeds high on the hog of the American body politic that needs trimming. Right, Tulsi? Congress? Blinken? Elon? Vivek? What say y'all? We can't ask Biden because though we see him, evidence of him, I think he's missing in action, so he's kind of out the pasture, I think, already. But it seems to me there's a lot of pork to cut here, and as well would help to stop the excusers, the apologists, aiders and abettors, the other conspirators of at least the found war crimes, if not genocide. It also seems apparent all these funds and arms given to Netanyahu to execute his war crimes are misappropriated public funds and material pursuant to federal law and also must be cut. Elon, Vivek, you listening? President Trump? So can we expect to see this? These people work to help clean out the compromised conspirators and Congress critters? Well, they're there, and they have the obligation and duty, don't they? I'm not going to hold my breath. But my listener must appreciate the gravity of this problem and how far off the rails it has gotten, that a responsive U.S. government, the acts of which are duty-bound by, for, and to we the people, would have corrected the problem immediately, and so as to avoid the prospect of we the people becoming the others, working with Satan Yehu to commit war crimes or even give the remotest appearance that we were. Because the Jewish state, so-called, this 1800s Zionist Federation movement political deception, whom itself is destroying Semitic Palestinian people, committing the anti-Semitism Satan Yehu complains of he has no right to claim, or as cause, is the terrorist state. And as a matter of international law, every nation has been obliged to stop this state of terrorism, led by Satan Yehu. I don't know how many more times it's going to have to be stated. And yes, all the times that pass that they aren't being stopped is a reflection on the international law and order. It does not exist. The accountability does not exist. You do not live in a world of law at this point. Only when they can point the finger at you and throw you in a cage, but not for them. And they work to protect their ally in crime. The U.S. government knows no place low enough, it seems, as the U.S. senator threatens invasion of the Netherlands over this. Tom Cotton has invoked the Hague Invasion Act in an effort to intimidate the International Criminal Court. There you got the word intimidate. That's a crime, but he's immune, I guess. And it's a lot more than that when you start looking at it closely. And so just so it's clear, Tom is picking tall APAC Cotton for at least a decade, if and you had a question as to his allegiance, where we see U.S. Senator Tom Cotton has lashed out at the International Criminal Court over his decision to issue an arrest warrant for Israel Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. He invoked a U.S. law which greenlights the use of military force against the Netherlands-based court. The Republican senator threatened the ICC by referring to the American Service Members Protection Act, formerly referred to as the Hague Invasion Act, which permits the United States President to use, quote, all means necessary and appropriate to free Americans or allied individuals detained at the request of the court. The Neuve, folks, Zionist speaking through the bribed puppet to defend the illegal occupier of Palestine's war crimes and genocide. Cotton condemned the ICC in a post on X. this platform become the official place to go, the official forum for official statements and threats. The post on X on Thursday branding it a kangaroo court and labeling the chief prosecutor, Karim Khan, a deranged fanatic. So says the puppet with the hands so far up a place where the sun don't shine that the fingers have smashed any brains he had. Hey, Cotton, the Zionist Federation political movement camouflaged as a government using Jews for legitimacy you base your allegiance on are the deranged fanatics. Besides, looking out to illegally occupied Palestine, you haven't seen the kangaroo courts at home? Well, apparently not. He says, woe to him and anyone who tries to enforce these outlaw warrants. Let me give them all a friendly reminder. The American law on the ICC is known as the Hague Invasion Act for a reason. Think about it, Cotton warned. Passed by Congress in 2002, the Hague Invasion Act was designed to shield U.S. personnel from the court's jurisdiction. It authorized military action to rescue any American or allied citizen held by the court in The Hague. Civil rights groups argued that the law aims to intimidate nations that supports the ICC treaty. So it even covers those conspirators committing genocide and other war crimes? I don't think it was the intent, Cotton. And besides, it doesn't absolve the United States from its obligation, even as a co-conspirator, from stopping the breaches to domestic and international law. In fact, more so, if the ICC has no power, though you recognize it, as have other European nations saying that they will make the arrest of Saint Yehu, your objections of extortionate and coercive threats then obliges the United States government doubly to do justice, not just make threats. And they need to stop the murder of innocent Semitic Palestinians. The ICC has accused Saint Yehu and Gallant, not so gallant, but using starvation as a method of warfare in Gaza and deliberately depriving the enclave's civilian population of essential supplies such as food, water, medical, without any obvious military necessity. So quit defending the defenseless illegal occupier. Cotton, listen. We the people, America, don't need you cotton picking cotton. Resign, you war criminal. And to prove its obligation to stop the craven bloodlust that America is an immoral country controlled by La Cosher Nostra, it's not just cotton picking cotton of the House of the AIPAC Compromise and why AIPAC promotes Congress stands with Israel, not just stands, but bribes those Congress critters yelling, the law, the law. Isn't bribery by members of foreign power against the law, though? Not, apparently, if you are a member of the tail-wag-the-dog Zionist regime, it seems. In other words, Zionists front AIPAC bribed Congress in the bought-and-paid-for U.S. Knesset. The United States has rejected the International Court's move to issue arrest warrants for Israel Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and former Defense Minister Yoav Gallant over alleged war crimes in Gaza, White House spokesman Karine Jean-Pierre said. We fundamentally reject the court's decision to issue arrest warrants for senior Israeli officials. We remain deeply concerned by the prosecutor's rush to seek arrest warrants and the troubling process errors, arrest warrants, and the troubling process errors that led to this decision, Jean-Pierre said during a briefing. She further stated that the U.S. fundamentally rejects the ICC's jurisdiction over the matter. It doesn't merely reject the arrest warrant. It fundamentally rejects the arrest warrant. If you catch that. I suppose it fundamentally makes the rejection more important fundamentally. Just a plain old rejection wasn't enough for these kosher clowns? Why these word salad? But here we are. However, when pressed on the basis for this rejection, Pentagon spokesperson Sabrina Singh was unable to provide a clear legal justification during a separate briefing. Oh, so a fundamentally tossed word salad, Annie, is that you? So if you don't have any legal assessment, how can you reject what's been presented by a legal body? One of the highest, you know, it's an international court now. How can you reject it if you don't have a counter legal assessment? Is it a political rejection? A reporter pressed Pentagon spokesperson Sabrina Singh. We can reject decisions from the court that come down in various forms, Singh claimed, offering no substantive legal explanation. Despite repeating questioning, Singh admitted that she was unaware of any formal legal review underpinning the administration's stance, raising questions about the credibility of the U.S. rejection, whether it is driven purely by political considerations. And that just sounds so much like the NYT author's promotion that Biden had offered an allowance that actually does not exist and would be essentially suicide for us to, I'm talking planetary suicide, at least northern hemisphere suicide, for it to actually have been true. But the congenitally deranged La Cosher Nostra here doesn't need no substantive legal authority to commit war crimes and genocide. So the U.S. accomplice fundamentally has no substantive legal explanation to give for its complicity. Book 'em, Dano. And we want to see the counterpoint to this. No threats from the U.S. if the U.N. toes the rules-based, baseless order, rogue Western regime's line. We get it right here, all in this together. We can see the two sides playing against the middle and how, again, hypocrisy rules, it seems. It's certainly not law. UNESCO bars Russian journalists from free speech session. Moscow's delegation insists that illegal ban was imposed under pressure from the collective West. The Russian journalists have been denied access to a UN session in Paris on media freedom, Moscow's delegation to UNESCO has claimed. On Friday, the UN cultural body presented a report on killings of journalists, which was criticized by Moscow for ignoring the murders of Russian journalists by Ukraine. UNESCO reportedly refused accreditation of Russian journalists to attend the panel or to enter the organization's headquarters in the French capital, which was held by the International Program for the Development of Communication, the Russian delegation said in a post on Telegram on Friday. The refusal came despite IPDC rules stating that the meetings are open to the public, and that no bans on visiting UNESCO are in place, the delegation noted. Quote, under pressure from the collective West, the UNESCO Secretariat, led by the Frenchwoman Audrey Azoulay, only pays lip service to freedom of speech while restricting the rights of journalists, the statement read. So much for the United States government respecting the press and protecting free speech. But what's a little genocide between allies? And more people here that need to be booked in the war against mankind are those continuing the fraudulent claim that the symptoms called COVID were just caused by a non-existent the virus, the cover-up, the fact it is a novel in 2003, the U.S. government, CDC patented, no less, synthetic protein string designed to mimic what was called a protein spike so that they could up the scary sea urchin spiky pictures to scare you into submission. The U.S. played a substantial role in causing COVID pandemic, an ex-CDC chief says. Several U.S. government agencies helped to fund lab work that led to the creation of the coronavirus, according to Robert Redfield. So this guy seems to me to be a government perception management agent or a dupe who thinks he is helping, but he is spreading the government narrative to hide the bioweapons attack the U.S. military contracted to deploy, and Trump obliged at warp speed without lawful authority. And Trump, he's just till the last day here, is still proud of that deemed Operation Hindsight 2020 in the last days of 2019, if you'll remember. And remember as well, if it was an actual coronavirus, it is endemic and can't be considered a communicable disease, let alone a pandemic, if that term could be property. And any lab work was likely figuring out how to package the novel synthetic protein to better get past the immune system, and that it is those different batches that we'd found and heard about that were used in the great Comey Swindle experiment, where we didn't see consistent responses. Robert Redfield, a former director of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control, has claimed that the COVID-19 was artificially developed and that the U.S. played a substantial role in starting the pandemic. Redfield, who led the agency under the administration of United States President Donald Trump, made the claim in an interview that was released on November 14th, but only drew media attention this week. Well, it was only noticed by mainstream media this week. It isn't worth talking about until this week, as the bigger population gets word of it and doesn't know their perceptions are being managed, partly to think this is not government-made or unnatural. So it can do it again, essentially. Oh, run! It's a deadly zoonotic platypus fever mutated from a beaver fever found in the Northwest that some miner brought down from the mountains and thought beavers, beavers don't lay eggs, doesn't matter, but fear eggs too, folks. Run, be intimidated, fear, dread, be terrorized. But listen here, there is always some truth in these stories and these promotions, and we can get some right cheer, just as you were told behind the woodshed, that not many at all will donate a coffee or two, but will buy into this fikadoo that we hear from these folks. Listen to this. Again, parse the truth from the narrative. Speaking to you just heard a bunch of it. I just read true. It was synthetic. Right? Can't be natural. He said that. That's the truth part. Speaking to author and podcaster Dana Parrish, he suggested that the virus was intentionally engineered as a part of the biodefense program. Now, the reporting here is it's suggested. But we absolutely know it can be proven. So again, this is a soft peddling, just to break the narrative out for people. When you look at the accountability for China, their accountability is not in the lab work and the creation of the virus, but in their failure to quickly report the incident to health authorities worldwide, including the CDC, when they realized the virus was on the loose, he said. Not that there is the virus, did you hear it? The admission. As I explained, Wuhan only followed the biodiversity treaty in transmitting to the world the protein string that it had found. I talked about that right up front. They immediately did that. They didn't delay. You hear it further, U.S. lying, saying that Wuhan failed, but it didn't. It didn't what? Timely report? Nonsense. The lab was the initial report, even if it was late, it reported, and it made the report before the Patsy got off the jet plane from China, if you remember. So there you are. Wuhan only made a report. It did not design the bioweapon. It is conceivable it didn't report because it is a secret why there might have been any delay, but they're being blamed for that delay, whatever that might have been. But once China realized it had been let loose, this thing had been let loose, it grew international legs and might implicate the lab that it was the source. It published the protein string as a natural virus to avoid liability that I think China saw coming. Then China had to play its part to terrorize their population. And they could never admit it was novel, man-made, or unnatural. Because, that's right, the virus. And how did they plausibly get to a vaccine to provide cover for the bioweapon attack? Bioweapons is defined by U.S. law. I've read them over and over and cited to them. And the Chinese over-the-top response to this reinforcing of this narrative was furthering the great COVID swindle globally, allowing all governments to lock down their populations and contrary to the local communicable disease law everywhere. They got a lot of mileage out of this thing. And the bulk of the populations failed to use that same communicable disease law to protect themselves. And as I've explained the entire time, maybe I'm the only one in the world that's doing so, actually. And I'm not sure that I take any pride being able to say that. It evidences a great failure and a vulnerability to all peoples in the world. For the naysayers, I've reported on a couple of reasons why China would like to reduce its population by half. The most recent you've heard is to fulfill the Sustainable Development Goals, a population reduction program to save Gaia from herself. Another was in that 1985 report by that general in the Chinese military explaining how China might like to stretch a leg west for more territory to grow, or because the population was becoming too big in China for the government to control, given the natives there were beginning and would ever think to get restless. And then for the West, it was the eugenics program. So we can hear a little bit more truth mingled in with the deception here, where Redfield suggested that the professor who works at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill was very involved in this research. I think he probably helped to create some of the original viral line, Redfield said, admitting he did not have any proof. I think there was a real possibility that the virus birthplace was Chapel Hill. Now, I'm not sure where this whistleblower, so-called, gets his info from, but the reference to the Chapel Hill is consistent with Dr. David Martin's information, and which exposed the CDC patent, among many other things. For that last paragraph, just change the word referencing virus to bioweapon, and you see the better truth to all this. Also consider, none of these people could have known it was other than a bioweapon until a dual use could be proven. It wasn't at any time or since. They're not shown to possess any of the dual use to be able to enjoy that exception in the Title 50 USC relating to bioweapons. And we know this is a cognitive warfare psyop because everything is still presupposed to be a theory after all this time and continuing the cover. Where we read, one of the prevailing theories of the origin of the COVID pandemic is that the virus was transmitted to humans by an animal, possibly a bat, at a food market. China has maintained that the virus is a natural origin and has dismissed the laboratory leak theory as an attempt to smear the country for political reasons. Remember, all governments have to say it is a natural origin to make it look like local communicable disease law is in play and providing authority, when it's only a man-made protein string. So no one read the law wherever, everywhere. No one read the law to see it provides no authority or power to government when it was such a protein string. So we hear, even till now, mere theories, theory this and theory that, when the known definitive answer condemns them all. My listener will not hear anything definitive after objective scrutiny or comparison to law because it regards nothing more than a military attack on mankind and the lead taken by the United States government military for everything I've read here all these time and have said all this time before it began. Identifying this part of the war against mankind for future reference, I put the hashtag, you can find us on X Twitter all the way back, as long as they're not hiding it, #HindsightTwenty20. And that was about would we the people recognize the method of and purpose for the 9/11 attack to stop the bio attack of 2020. And hope springing eternal for me, now dashed, we didn't. And based on this cognitive warfare campaign waged and continuing in this notice, Newsdisk, the news article, we won't. And you say, oh, contraire, my listener may say to me, and we see it now. Well, to that I must remind us all that they moved so much further in on other areas in this attack using the great Comey swindle reset as cover that Trump is back now with the evolved techno swamp creatures up around his neck with the new and improved genocidal eugenics Zio cabinet to further the plan. Trust the plan, folks, as you sit there and watch the Siberian gulag being built around you. Redfield previously said the COVID-19 pandemic, which killed more than 7 million people worldwide and caused a global economic shutdown, turndown they say here, most likely started with the lab leak in Wuhan, China, and suggested that the debate on the virus's origin was squashed. He has also criticized the World Health Organization for failing to hold Beijing accountable. It was them, folks, not us. I mean, not the U.S. It was them. Yeah, from our perspective, it's all of them murderers. So where is the accountability, Dano? These guys are really masters of what they do. I really appreciate how they get at people. And the lies, the truth they tell, and the lies they covered up with. Perfect. This is a really nice article here for that. As I said, I think this guy is a promoter of the psyop, of the narrative. Again, to break down the ability to identify it, but as I've told you and I've showed you, I've repeated it over, I've explained it. It's all in the basic, the black and white. You just read for it. It's right there. The black and white of the patents, the black and white of the laws, the black and white of the communicable disease. You know, whether you go federal law, whether you look around the world, it's all written. It's all for us to follow. There was no reason for this to exist. And no one insisted on the non-existence of something that didn't exist. No, they let it grow into something that feared people. And the consequences, a systematic review of autopsy findings and deaths after COVID-19 vaccination, and I'll have a link for that finding for you to read, a systematic review of autopsy findings and deaths from COVID-19 vaccination. Yes, COVID-19 mRNA vaccines cause sudden death, and most are within the first 2 weeks. That was, they were labeled, that's the why, remember, they were labeled to be unvaccinated people. And the rule that they used was, you're not considered vaccinated until after the 2 weeks. So the note here by Keith here on Cryptogon.com is highlighted in the article to be mentioned. The mean time for vaccination to death was 14.3 days. And most deaths occurred within a week from the last vaccination administration. And so there was also a link to an ex-Twitter from William Makis, MD, and I want to read that quickly. It's just a kind of introducing this study. Breaking, most censored paper on the earth. Lancet censored sudden death COVID-19 vaccine autopsy paper, has been peer-reviewed and published. It has been 2 years now that the unprecedented censorship from Lancet and another Elsevier journal, which pulled this paper at the last minute. This has never been seen in scientific publishing before. 325 autopsies of recently COVID-19 vaccinated people who died suddenly, largest autopsy series in the world. Meantime, before this vaccination of death was the 14.3 days, 73.9% of the deaths were independently adjudicated as directly due to and or significantly contributed to by the COVID-19 vaccination. Yes, COVID vaccines resulted in sudden death early after vaccination. Parenthetically, they also do it over the long term too. Thanking Dr. McCullough and Nick Holscher for the countless hours of hard work it took to get this published. Congratulations to all my co-authors. This is a moment of achievement in the face of historically unprecedented scientific censorship. And so we can read here, the paper proves why they did it. They hid the deaths, but we got them, finally. Dead died suddenly. So this is the work that's been done, dedicated work that's been done, and there's a study peer-reviewed. You can use it. I would say you can use it, bring it along again for the futures that come on, what they're trying to hide, how they did it. Now, I told you the evidence will be coming. It's coming a little bit later than I thought it would, but here it is anyway. And start studying this thing. I believe it's not going away. And I believe there's going to be very similar things. And I guess what I'm talking about here is not really communicable diseases. I'm talking about anything the government can use to invoke its police power authority. That's really what the killer was here for us, we the people. But within that local communicable disease law, I went quickly to find and showed you quickly when we realized what was up, that the protections were there that most everybody did not use. So I have the link to this article. Please get it. Get the blogcaster. I'll get it. We'll get that back. Hopefully it'll be up right on Sunday or so this week. And start to see what it talks about. The spike protein associated tissue damage, the thrombogenicity, immune system dysfunction, and carcinogenicity. And I reported last episode about the thrombogenicity and not these other two. So this is an amplification of what I was reading here last episode. So understand the consistency. I try to bring the information that's accurate, and it will support itself. And here we go, week to week. Moving into economy a bit here and what might be going on in the world. Because as you say, that we had a downturn of economies because of the great COVID swindle. And now they're using that as every excuse to hurt and harm us. We also talked about what is Trump going to do. He's got economic training, so he has the abilities. Like, he wants to bring on the tariffs. There's a lot of things he knows to do that he could actually pull it out. Well, there's been reflections outside of the United States that look like they're going to be working inside. The first notice was from Argentina's Milei and cutting all the agencies, and you're watching the DOGE working to consider that. And remember, it's only an advisory council. And Vivek and Musk just agreed to that. They just agreed. They're not going to even be part of it. They're going to let other, you know, gangbuster go-getters for the American way go jump into that waste of time, in my mind, the waste of time advisory council. But it's coming out, as I said it would. But here, Mexican, we go outward and to look backwards into the country. Mexican lower house approves elimination of autonomous state bodies. And I want you to read for the problems that this is going to cause. And what they call it decentralizing, but they're actually centralizing. This is like the theme that's going on. It's the same thing with the cryptocurrency. There is something in the world that people have figured out, the rulers, if you will, have figured out about how they want to play this, and they're playing it out exactly right. Mexico's lower house has given a general approval to a constitutional reform bill that would abolish 7 autonomous public bodies as part of a budget austerity measures. The project to reform, supplement, and repeal of various provisions of the political constitution of the United Mexican States related to the simplification of public functions was approved in the general with 347 votes in favor and 128 against, the 0 abstentions, the Chamber of Deputies said on X. Again, this platform is very central to all this. It's so amazing in a way. Maybe people don't think that it's amazing, but when you read very much and to watch this X Twitter platform turn into literally this global place where officials announce things, it's quite the thing. It's quite the thing that Elon Musk knew to pick up and has nothing to do with the freedom of speech, although he tells you it only gets so much reach. He tells you the truth of that part. But the draft reform points to the need of administrative reorganization in accordance with the principles of rationality and austerity. With the adoption of these reforms, the functions of the autonomous state agencies will mainly be transferred to the federal government bodies. The lawmakers also plan to discuss the creation of a new decentralized body that would have the power to control economic competition and monopolies. Centralized decentralization means danger, Will Robinson. You understand the power that they have when they can control economic competition and monopolies and who is and who isn't? And then you see what they're going to think about doing in the United States. I'm not saying they shouldn't do things. What I'm saying is look how consistent they are across, and look at the dangers we can see when we look into another country. They're actually monopolizing the monopoly in the government control. Now, don't forget the Siberian Gulag sitting right there to start controlling it, just like Russia's been putting together. But there are still some accounting that has to be done, and sometimes there's rights and sometimes we get them, and we can, we got to stand up and defend ourselves. This has to, going to help someone's economy fairly well, but the people of Colorado are going to have to foot the bill. Colorado agrees to settlement in First Amendment case where a designer was coerced into same-sex wedding website design. Colorado's government has consented to a settlement requiring it to disperse more than $1.5 million in attorney fees to Lori Smith, a graphic designer who won in a First Amendment challenge against the state's anti-discrimination law. Oh, so the attorneys get the fees. Oh, well, what the bill they will. This legal resolution announced on Tuesday follows a definitive Supreme Court verdict that Colorado's attempt to coerce Smith into designing wedding websites for same-sex couples violated her free speech rights in conflict with her religious beliefs. So it's just not about free speech. It's about they had to be tied to that religious belief, right? And so watch carefully what they're saying here. But this is a, at least she gets her costs covered. At least the attorneys get paid. The case, known as the 303 Creative LLC versus Alenis, which we first covered back in 2022, was decisively settled earlier this year when a federal district court ruled that Colorado must stop mandating Smith to engage in speech that contradicts her convictions. Quote, after enduring Colorado censorship for nearly 7 years, I'm incredibly grateful for the work of my attorneys at Alliance Defending Freedom to bring my case to victory, Smith stated. She added, as the Supreme Court said, I'm free to create art consistent with my beliefs and without fear of Colorado punishing me anymore. Land of the free, folks. The Supreme Court's 6-3 decision last June reinforced its stance stating that Colorado's enforcement of public accommodations law. Where have you heard that before? The enforcement of public accommodations law to compel Smith amounted to forced speech. Please put these things together. Where have you heard the accommodations law brought up relative to the great Comey swindle and me reading it to you as a defense? Just like this right here. Justice Neil Gorsuch, authoring the opinion for the majority, pointed out that the law was an attempt by Colorado to, quote, force an individual to speak in ways that align with its views but defy her conscience about a matter of major significance. Pretty fascinating right there, right? So it's there. We got to go after it. 7 years she's had to weather this. And they talk about a coercion. That's felony, folks. I keep telling you, Colorado, it's got to be the same way in Colorado. It's a felony violation for the government to do that under color of authority. Those officials that did that should be going to jail, not just have the Supreme Court defend her rights 7 years late. Biden administration to support controversial UN cyber treaty. Remember what I've been talking about, how this thing is coming together, and all these episodes, and today again. The Biden administration plans to support a controversial cybercrime treaty at the United Nations this week, despite concerns that it could be misused by authoritarian, just despite concerns that it could be misused by authoritarian regimes, according to the senior government official of the United States. You have heard today that the United States and the Zionists aren't an authoritarian regime. I don't know what to tell you. And here they come. That's why they're going to go ahead and allow it. And boy, like I told you, these international conventions, you have to start learning how to engage your government that's representing you to stop it. This will have to be going probably to the Senate to be approved, but keep an eye on it. The agreement would be the first legally binding UN agreement on cybersecurity. It could become a global legal framework for countries to cooperate on preventing and investigating cybercrimes. Again, they always give the plausible good reason, but it's not for that. However, as you found out, you have to be presumed to be a child before you can use rebut the presumption before you'll be able to be clean enough to go touch the internet, the dirty place that it is, because that's what they're protecting you against, remember? However, critics fear it would, cyber criminals investigation use would be used by authoritarian states to try and pursue dissidents overseas or collect data from political opponents. If looking at what they did to the social medias, isn't the United States government, the military, isn't evidence enough of that regime and its authoritarian nature. Still, the official said that there is a persuasive reason to support the treaty. For instance, it would advance the criminalization of child sexual abuse material and consensual spreading of intimate images, they said. Okay, again, the UN, we're going to women, children, and the indigenous, and all the children have the rights, and that's why we're going to destroy everybody. Now you're all children until you can rebut the presumption. Then you're going to be our subjects so that we can go after you. Until the government sees nothing on this, or refuses to see hard evidence of war crimes or genocide, like the Biden administration, or Blinken, or Austin is blind to, but will fabricate violations, well, because of a ham sandwich. You know, Hamas did it. Anybody does it, but the government. It's approved and okay until the government start to do this kind of thing. We're already witnessing all of this. I report on this all the time. It's partly why I report on it, and I just find it fascinating that these stories come along to prove it back to us. In addition to wider involvement of member states would to make cybercrime electronic evidence more available to the United States, one official said. If all the members signed the agreement, it would update extradition treaties to provide more opportunities to apprehend cyber criminals, you cyber token citizen, and have them extradited, the official added. Remember, extrajurisdictional crimes that are done and people are extradited, and Interpol, this is years ago, Interpol is to be doing all this. Now it's just touching the cyber world can get you extradited, it seems. So people will be able to be extradited for violating a foreign country's law? How do they control that, actually? If you're watching now, when I talk about Kim.com, we're talking about extradition and Julian Assange, you better start putting these things together. This is what they're working on. This is what the United States, that beacon of freedom, being free. Yeah, right. No, they agree to it. Hundreds of submissions by advocacy groups and other parties criticize the U.S. involvement in the agreement. The U.S. plans to strictly enforce human rights and other safeguards in the treaty, the official said, adding the Department of Justice would closely scrutinize requests and refuse to provide any assistance that was inconsistent with the agreement. How can we say you're a liar, liar, pants on fire? Look what they do to people. Anyway, that's what they'll tell you. Last month, six Democratic senators wrote that the treaty could legitimize efforts by authoritarian countries like Russia, China, interjection, the U.S., to censor and surveil internet users, furthering repression and human rights abuses around the world. Like Zionists in Palestine? While the executive, why are they caring for it now, folks, in this treaty? Why now? Why not on the before? They have threatened the ICC. While the executive branch efforts to steer this treaty is a less harmful direction are commendable, more must be done to keep the conventions from being used to justify such actions. In its current form, the convention was a serious threat to privacy, security, freedom of expression, and artificial intelligence safety, the letter added. Nuclear button, folks. While the treaty is expected to pass the vote in the UN, it was highly unlikely it would be ratified by the U.S. government unless there was an implementation of human rights controls, the official said. And if it does, do we expect to be extradited to Hong Kong to face charges like this? Hong Konger charged with sedition under Article 23 security law over social media posts. A 57-year-old man has been charged under Hong Kong's homegrown security law, known as Article 23, over allegedly publishing seditious posts on the social media platforms. The National Security Department, remember the extraditions, folks, don't be speaking bad about Hong Kong. The National Security Department of the police laid a charge of knowingly publishing publications that had a seditious intention against the man on the Wednesday morning, according to the government statement issued at 2 p.m. on the same day. The statement said that the post incited hatred towards the central authorities and the government of the Hong Kong Special Administrative Region, as well as inciting violence. Now, we're not saying incite violence, but you know better, I have a criticism. Under Article 23, the maximum penalty for sedition was raised to 7 years in jail, up from 2 years, while offenders found to have colluded with external force in committing sedition face a maximum of 10 years behind bars. Well, there you go, folks. The colluders are subject too, right? Blinken? Satan Yehu? In response to inquiries, the Security Bureau provides figures for the numbers of national security-related arresting prosecutions though it does not provide a breakdown to the numbers of arrests under the specific security laws. And remember, I've told you they're going to go through national security in order to take us out. National security seems to trump all protections globally, don't it? And back to here, we'll get into our new agency of efficiency here, what I've been talking about coming on, that it's not. Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy have spelled out their plans for Doge, D-O-G-E. Their approach includes recommending executive actions that could result in massive headcount reductions across the government, which everyone says, yay, but look at how they're going to do it. Look at what they're talking about, the actual function. Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy, I'll get it, were officially appointed to co-lead the president-elect Donald Trump's Department of Governmental Efficiency last week on Wednesday. The two men spelled out their plans for the advisory group in a long article in the Wall Street Journal. Musk and Ramaswamy said that they will serve as outside volunteers, making recommendations that allow the Trump administration to cut the federal government down to size. Their primary focus is on cutting down federal agencies, which they view as wasteful and anti-democratic. Now, I'm not saying doing this is wrong. What I'm saying is watch how they're doing it. Look at the functioning and how the law is working in here. And it's, again, back to suggestion. It's not a direct application to get these things done, like a law would be. Musk and Ramaswamy said that they'll hire a lean team of small governmental crusaders, the Crusades, folks, to work with the Trump administration and the White House Office of Budget and Management. And so get this article, read how they're going to do it. They claim that they're going to eliminate the need of the DOGE by July 4th, 2026. Folks, it's just an advisory council. That's what we the people get instead of the direct law, the direct representation that looks actually for American first and gets us on track. We hope that Trump is going to do what he said instead of what he looks like he likes to do, which is make contentious things so it looks like he's important. And he's actually just a Caesar watching his empire go down, as I was reporting earlier, an insightful essay earlier in the broadcast, which is BTWRLM 604. And I'll be with you next week. Tech Tips for Nature Willing.
Echoes call, the hour is near. Behind the woodshed, the truth you'll hear. Every Sunday, the clock strikes three. Hal's voice rolls like thunder, fierce and free. Pull up a chair, lean in close, listen to learn. Dose by dose, behind the woodshed.
Truth still. heed the call. Behind the woodshed standing tall.